We might appear to be normal human beings, but in truth, my family is the Munsters. We used to be the Addams Family, but when my brother married a sunny Southern California bride, I now think of us as the knockoff comedic goth family because they had that one normal blonde too. I'm not quite sure if she was the waspy cousin or some wholesome niece, but she didn't seem to notice the Munsters' creepiness at all. That is, until her suitors ran screaming from her doorstep when her Franken-servant cracked the lead-studded, haunted house portal. Okay, we don't have a doorbell that plays death knells or a severed limb as a butler. We don't have a butler. But we are pretty morbid and Reaper-obsessed. As children, when my brother Willie and I argued, typical sibling disagreements, my dad would stop our nonsense short with morbidness. Hey, when Mom and I kick the bucket, you're going to be all each other's got, so knock it off! We're in preschool, BT-dubs. The result? Sobs. Hysterical snot bubble bawling in our feety pajamas. And yet he always said that every time we'd bicker. When he went on European business trips, he usually took the Concorde. His company sprang for it when he had to go to meetings that required him to arrive looking alive. But he never liked that supersonic plane. One of these days, he'd say every time, that pig's gonna blow, and I just hope I'm not on it when it does. Tragically and memorably, he was right. That pig did blow, though without him on it. We skied every Christmas and would be warned to be careful because every year, quote, someone takes a header and rams into a tree and that's it. He talked disease, drunk driving, choking mid-steak. We had conversations about the end all the time. He liked to discuss who was dying or who just looked like they had one foot in the grave. I ran into Bob today. He looks like he's on his way out. Sunday nights were our family eat-out night, usually Chinese. He'd often have just one more dumpling because, hey, we're all going to be pushing Daisy someday. His attitude wasn't a cheesy, you-only-live-once type bullshit that some people use to justify hedonistic behavior. It's not like he encouraged me to get high on Venice Beach or told my brother to roll a condom on that dick before it's dust. His attitude was actually joyful. He was and is a firm believer in making the most of our time here, being productive, having strong human connections, and enjoying every day, not as our last per se, but because our days will one day run out. His zest for life rubbed off. Rather than making us neurotics who were scared of life, all this talk and acknowledgement of death made my brother and me embrace every morsel of life. Morbidity doesn't have to be fear-inducing. Au contraire, it made us drink life to the lees, after we turned 21, of course, and relish every bite of food. We cherished music, we flipped on the lights and immediately flipped on the radio. We sucked the marrow out of anything that appealed to the desperate-for-fuel senses and always tried to savor memories of all that is fleeting and ephemeral. As adults, we still have this zest for life and the same dark humor. Willie has a tattoo of both his arms in a beautiful black script, Mors certa non vita, Latin for death is certain, life is not. Now we both have kids of our own, nuggetini, as we like to say, and we're both trying to filch as much joy as we can out of our lives, and now our children's fleeting childhoods. And maybe we're passing on the tradition. My kids aren't afraid of spooky things because they've been exposed to them their whole lives. I have art with skulls and hourglasses all around our house, and my kids don't blink. But one time, a little pal of my daughter Sadie's was sleeping over and woke up in the middle of the night after a nightmare. With tears streaming down her face, she pitter-pattered into our room and burrowed into bed with me and my sleeping husband. "Mrs. Cargman, I'm scared of your house. There are so many skeletons," she said. I cuddled her and told her they don't have to be scary if you just think of them as part of us. I took her on a tour of the house and we greeted every skeleton, giving them each a silly name. Then I tucked her in with us so she wouldn't be lonely beside my comatose daughter, and she fell asleep feeling better. Harry, my husband, was a little shocked when he woke up with a kid in our bed who was not our own. Actually, that's putting it mildly. I think he said, what the fuck is this kid doing in our bed? But when I explained it to him, he understood. He was once new to my family, too, and he found my morticia side odd then, but now he totally gets it. My awesome little collection of hourglasses used to freak him out. They reminded him that time was constantly ebbing away. But now he understands the way I see that fragile shelf grouping. Time passing is constant, so don't sweat the small shit. don't wish away periods of time, enjoy it all, and we pretty much do. Just as my parents have done for as long as I can remember. I reach first for the obituary section in the New York Times, and I'm not only interested in the cadavers who got headlines, I'm into the microscopic listy bodies too. No matter the length or size of the font, I love stories of a life well lived and get inspired by what people make of their time on Earth. Building on Billy Crystal's idea in When Harry Met Sally to combine the obits with the real estate section, he leaves two sons, seven grandchildren, and a sprawling pre-war penthouse with wraparound terrace. Now that real estate has gone online, I think that's a very good editorial suggestion, too.